Greetings, warriors, veterans, and America-loving citizens from sea to shining sea. Welcome to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Hoo-ah! The Frontlines of Freedom team really appreciate you joining us this fine day in America. We are proud Americans. Here's what we have for you this hour. We're going to start by talking with Dan Kish about energy independence. Then Joe Robb will present Save a Veteran, and Amanda Winters will discuss selecting the right firearm. Of course, we'll conclude with our military history and our self-defense report. So it's a pleasure to introduce Dan Kish. Dan's a senior fellow at the Institute for Energy Research and the American Energy Alliance. So welcome, Dan. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Colonel. Pleasure to be here.
Dan, tell us about your background. How did you get involved in energy and energy independence?
Well, it certainly wasn't by design, I'll tell you that. I grew up in Western Michigan. Along the way, I was going to school and ultimately ended up in Washington, D.C., but don't hold that against me, working for a congressman for the whole state of Alaska. And this was right after the Alaska pipeline was built and commissioned and started, which at one point delivered 2 million barrels a day to the lower 48 states. Got involved, ultimately ended up as chief of staff for the Natural Resources Committee in the House with a big staff of people much smarter than me, lawyers and geologists and foresters and people like that, but dealing with natural resources, and worked in the Senate for a stint, worked for the Speaker at one point, and finally decided to get out of that business and go into the try to figure out how this works in terms of real policy. And that's what I do.
Okay. You know, it sounds like you took your time and learned, and you obviously understand how power flows in Washington, D.C. Okay. 4 years ago, our nation was energy independent. Now we're not. Tell us what energy independent is and why it's good.
Well, energy independence means producing more energy than we consume, in essence, so that we're not dependent upon others for something as fundamental as energy. And I guess I should start out with that. If you look in the dictionary, the definition of energy is a capacity to do work. Now, we could do that with our hands or the back of a horse, or if we have enough kids, we can send them all out in the field and have them do stuff for us. Or we can use the capacity to do work, amplify our strength to become the greatest nation on earth. And that's precisely what we did. The Industrial Revolution is misnamed. It was really an energy revolution because we started using denser forms of energy. Up until that time, everything was renewable. The United States surpassed England in energy consumption right around the beginning of the 1900s. And since then, we've been the number one economy on earth. We're no longer the largest consumer of energy. China is by a significant amount. And it just so happens that currently we're moving into a direction where we're becoming more dependent upon China for our energy and less dependent on our own resources at home, which is going to move that dependency to them for our energy supplies, for all these so-called green energy sources and EVs and batteries and you name it. And it's being done in front of God and everybody. And it's amazing to me that there hasn't been more of a military focus on just exactly what this means geopolitically, strategically, economy-wise, and the like.
Dan, I couldn't agree more with you. If we're dependent on another country, much less one that is hostile to us, for something as vital as energy or food or something that basic to what we need to just survive as a nation, we're crazy, and particularly crazy if we have the ability to produce it ourselves.
Oh, and we sure do, Denny. That's the flip side of this. We're in a situation now where we have enormous resources. We have the world's largest supplies of coal by far. And yet, this year, we will consume less coal than we did it in any time in the United States since 1902. Our economy, I can't tell you how many more multiples our economy is than of that time. We were still almost a third world nation in 1902. we're not using the things over which we have control, and we are compelling policies to use energy sources that are controlled and dominated by China. Chinese companies make 80% of the world's solar panels, and OPEC produces 40% of the world's oil. We're becoming twice as dependent upon China for solar panels as the world is for OPEC on oil.
Somehow that sounds stupid to me.
Yeah, it does kind of, doesn't it?
You know, now, if China was our closest ally, if China was Canada, it might make sense. But they are clearly a hostile enemy. And all this is leading to electric. Can you imagine combat tanks on the battlefield needing to be recharged because their electricity ran down? Or jet fighters in the air or bombers needing to be recharged?
Yeah, I mean, it's absurd. It's absurd, and yet our energy secretary talks about those sorts of things and has discussed how she wants to convert the military to battery power. I'm not sure I want our nation's first and foremost constitutional duty, which is protection of the population, dependent upon Chinese batteries. And I think Americans, if they think it through, would be asking the same questions. Now, they'll say that, gee, we'll just build those factories here, as has been proposed in Michigan. But most of the component parts for those batteries are also run directly. The supply lines are run directly through China. And it would be one thing if we were like Japan and we're energy poor. We're not. We have the largest supplies of hydrocarbons on Earth. And it's just a matter of the political will and this movement, which seems to be dedicated to denying ourselves the use of our own resources so that we could strengthen ourselves and frankly, help the rest of the world as well.
And all of it because we're afraid of pollution. You know, the world hasn't changed. Certainly the last 100 years, we and everybody, especially China, has been doing things that do, quote, pollution, but nothing has changed. I'm 82. Nothing's changed in my lifetime. So this is nonsense. Dan, we're about out of time.
It's actually gotten better, Denny. The air is much cleaner now.
Okay. So a crisis we don't have. Talk to me for a minute about the American Energy Alliance or the Institute for Energy Research. What is it and how can listeners get in touch, stay plugged in?
Yeah, the Institute for Energy Research is our sort of educational arm. There are a number of us who dig into the facts and numbers and data on energy and try to assemble more scholarly works. The American Energy Alliance is our more active, we get a little more active. Well, I can say things under the auspices of American Energy. I can talk like a regular person.
Okay.
And so, and what we do, and our websites are instituteforenergyresearch.org and americanenergyalliance.org. Not very original, but somebody beat us to the acronyms. And what we do is take deep dives into energy markets, not only here, but around the world. We're believers that energy is actually leads to freedom, in essence, and sustains freedom. And if we look back at history, we basically conclude that ultimately, if you take care of those important things at home, if you keep a good roof on your house, you're better off in the long run and have a lot fewer things to worry about. And America's blessed with these energy resources, and we ought to be using them instead of pushing ourselves into the arms of the Chinese.
Yes, sir. Dan, thank you. Thank you for sharing with us today. Thank you for serving our nation the multiple ways that you've done. We need to stay in touch. We sure see things eye to eye, and particularly we see the danger to our nation. And I think we need to talk about that again. Thank you for joining us today, brother.
Thank you, Denny. Really appreciate it.
Next up, we'll talk about Save a Warrior with Joe Robb. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. It's time to do some knee bends, go halfway down, do 40. Do this while thinking patriotic thoughts. I'll be right back. Friends, there's not too many things I enjoy more than helping veterans and eating great beef jerky. Now I can do both. My good friends at Tango3.org and America's Best Beef Jerky use the highest quality beef to make the best jerky I've ever tasted. Trust me, I've eaten a lot. But that's not all. They give 100% of the profit to vetted veterans programs, mental health and suicide prevention. Go to americasbestbeefjerky.com and order now. And at checkout, check the Frontlines of Freedom promo code. I'm Colonel Danny Gillum. Thanks for joining us today on Frontlines of Freedom. I'm happy to welcome to the show Army vet Joe Robb from Save a Warrior. Joe served as an infantryman, deployed to combat, suffered some moral injury. He had trouble dealing with it, but he did deal with it, and we'll learn how. Welcome aboard, Joe. Glad you could join us.
Glad to be here, Danny. Thanks for inviting me.
Okay, Joe, tell us your story. First, when and why did you join the Army, and then tell us about what happened.
Well, I joined the Army in 2002. And I was, 9/11 happened, and I was still in high school, and I was a homeschooled kid growing up, so I didn't go to a traditional public school, but I was at home doing my schoolwork when 9/11 happened, and I was very concerned, distraught, disturbed by what was going on in the world, and I come from a long background of military family. We could trace our history back to the War of 1812, so it's part of our tradition to be in the military generationally. So it was in the cards I was going to serve at some point in my life. That really kind of solidified it for me. So as soon as I was old enough, at 17 years old, I enlisted in the delayed entry program in the Army, and that kicked it off. So 2002, September of 2002 is when I went to basic training and then named Fort Benning, Georgia, and was in the infantry. And I could have been in whatever job I wanted, not to toot my own horn, but I'm a smart kid. I scored really high in my ASVAB, and my recruiter said, you could be whatever job you want. And it's like, well, if I'm going to join during wartime, I want to fight in a war. So infantry is what I picked. So I was stationed in Baumholder, Germany for several months prior to getting deployed to Iraq. Then I deployed to Iraq in March of 2003, did a 15-month deployment, and I was in central Baghdad for the majority of my deployment in the Green Zone. During my time there, I was a lot of foot patrols. I was mechanized infantry, but I didn't spend a lot of time in the back of a Bradley. I spent a lot of time just humping a 240 through downtown Baghdad, and I was also my platoon radio operator, so carried a radio on my back a lot too. And January 18th of 2004 is my live day. At the time, it was the biggest IED to ever hit, and it hit my checkpoint in Baghdad. It was checkpoint one in the Green Zone. We called it Assassin's Gate. That was Alpha Company 2-6 Infantry Assassins, so they named the gate after us. And that was my major morally injurious event. A lot of casualties that day.
Define moral injury.
In a nutshell, moral injury is when something should have happened but didn't, or did happen and shouldn't have, that betrays my moral compass or society's moral compass in some way. It's usually a sense of betrayal in a high-stakes situation by legitimate authority.
So it might be, if I was your platoon leader and you were a sniper, and I told you the first next person comes out of the door of that hut over there, shoot him. And it turns out that first person that comes out is a pregnant woman, and you shoot him because you were told to.
Yep.
You did everything right, but you can't stop hurting for it. Is that an example?
That's a prime example. It's oftentimes, it shows up the most amongst combat veterans and military in general, veterans in general, but especially combat veterans, in that we have to follow orders. You know, chain of command's there for a reason. And oftentimes those orders internally for me and for others is damned if I do, damned if I don't. And so I end up owning, even though intellectually I can rationalize, I had to follow orders, I'm doing my job, I'm serving my country. But internally, I carry a great deal of shame because I had to do something that internally I'm not okay with.
Yes.
Or I may be shamed back home for. I was worried that I'd be labeled a baby killer like, you know, your generation, the Vietnam generation, had to deal with coming home, because there was a lot of kids that died that day on my checkpoint. And that wrecked me inside, and I couldn't talk about it. I couldn't tell people how I really felt, because it's also, amen, it's the infantry. We don't talk about that.
That's moral injury, and that's the infantry culture and the military culture. This is Colonel Danny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Joe Robb about moral injury. Okay, let's go to Save a Warrior. Obviously, Save a Warrior saved you, warrior. Tell us about it.
Yeah, ultimately, Save a Warrior saved my life. So after I got out of the Army, I was med boarded out in December of 2005. I spent from 2005 to 2020 in a downward spiral. And, you know, on the outside, everything looked good. I went to college, got a couple degrees, had a family. But ultimately, every day I was asking myself, is today the day I kill myself? And with the statistics being at the time 22 a day, we're closer to 40 a day now. But I was among those statistics of a possibility I'm going to kill myself. And I couldn't talk to anyone about it. I felt very isolated and alone. And by the time I ended up at Save a Warrior, I'd become a daily drinker. I was a raging alcoholic. My marriage of 14 years imploded in a spectacular fashion. I nearly lost everything, was at the brink of being homeless. So I got sober, and I'm plugged into the 12-step rooms ending in Anonymous to help with my sobriety. But I still wanted to kill myself. So I showed up to Save a Warrior. And when I came home from Iraq, I felt like part of my soul was still downrange. Like a piece of me was left behind. And at Save a Warrior, I got my soul back. And it, I don't know how in depth you want me to get with it right now. Brings me to tears when I think about it. I didn't know that the shame that I was feeling about the moral injury, about the things that I had to do in war, you know, because it's the Temple of Mars. I was a child. I'm 18 years old, given godlike powers in a combat zone, being able to choose life and death for others. That part of why I was struggling to deal with that was because of survival mechanisms, survival traits that were maladaptive, that were driven by things that happened earlier in my life. You know, ways of being, ways of processing information, ways of learning, dealing with my emotions. It was actually driven from my earlier childhood. And I had no awareness of that. And at Save a Warrior, in a 72-hour conversation, and that's all Save a Warrior is a conversation, a very artistic conversation, was able to unpack that and unpack where my emotions were coming from, where the shame and the moral injury was really affecting me and was driven more so by events of my early childhood. You know, I grew up in a very poverty-stricken, addicted, abusive home. There was sexual abuse, there was violence. And part of my drive, I learned being completely honest with myself, and that's what I learned how to do at Save a Warrior as well, is I joined the Army to escape. So,
okay. The point, though, is that Save a Warrior allowed you to get your act back together again.
Absolutely.
And that's what Save a Warrior does for soldiers and everybody. Now, okay, we don't need to go into the details. I hope our listeners are interested in, one, if you know somebody who's hurting like that, plug them in. Two, if you're inclined, I'm sure that you can use some help if there's some, and I'm sure you're a nonprofit and can accept funds and need funds. How can people plug in, either to ask for help or to offer help or to offer support? How can they help Save a Warrior or contact Save a Warrior?
Absolutely. If anyone's interested in finding out more about Save a Warrior, our website is www.saveawarrior.org. A lot about our program is on there. And there's also contact links. There's a donate link on there. We are a 501c3 nonprofit. We do a lot of fundraising. The program itself is at no cost to the veteran. We serve veterans nationwide. We're located in Hillsboro, Ohio. So it does cost money to run our program. It's $5,000 a seat is what it costs, but we don't charge the veteran that. We just spend a great deal of time fundraising. So any help is more than welcome. If you click that donate link, please mention that you heard about us from Front Lines of Freedom. And you know, we want to make sure that the mechanisms that have helped us share this message are acknowledged as well. You can also reach out to me directly. My email address is joe@saveawarrior.org. I'm the director of culture at Save a Warrior, and I'm also a program facilitator.
Joe, thank you. This is kind of information we need to get out to our listeners. As you explained in your own personal testimony, sometimes when you're hurting, you won't let yourself talk to anybody else about it for all kinds of a number of reasons, none of which are good, but they're real. There are soldiers out there now who are hurting, and we need to help them.
So absolutely.
Thank you. Thank you for what you're doing. Thank you for Save a Warrior. God bless you, brother. I'm glad that we're friends.
Me too. It's been a blessing to be here. Thank you, Denny.
Coming up next on Frontlines of Freedom, Navy vet Amanda Winters will discuss selecting the right firearm, then we'll open our weekly mailbag. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. Troops, it's time for some one-arm push-ups. Just do a dozen with each arm twice, then take a break, but stay in the area. I'll be right back.
Help! HelpVet.net is here to help all veterans, active military, and families. HelpVet.net is a national help center helping the military community with their everyday needs. Whether you need a realtor, an attorney, discounted services, or information on retirement benefits, financial resources, and much more, our vast network of hand-picked qualified service providers are waiting to help you. With up-to-date military news and resources, you can find answers to all your needs at HelpVet.net. HelpVet.net. Never forget, never forgotten.
Friends, Adam here, Patriot Foods, U.S. only company. Frozen fruits and vegetables straight from our dirt, not overseas. Support the U.S. farmer. When you shop at PatriotFoods.com, we give back to a military family in need. We got to take care of each other, my friends. We have to. So important. 10% off PatriotFoods.com. 10% off promo code FREEDOM. And shop today.
Welcome back to Frontlines of Freedom. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Troops, I really do welcome your comments and questions. Contact me through frontlinesoffreedom.com or comment on Facebook. It's a pleasure to welcome back to the show Air Force veteran Amanda Winters. Our nation's getting more dangerous, and that's not counting all the possible terrorists that come across our southern border each day. Our show has been encouraging listeners to get trained and get armed, but we've not really had as good a focus on how to find the right weapon for you. Amanda is really an expert on this, and she's here to fill that gap. Welcome back, Amanda.
Thanks, Denny. How are you?
Awesome. It's a lovely day.
It is. Gorgeous.
Start by telling us about your time in the Air Force.
I've spent 15 years in the Air Force doing medical supply, and it was a great pleasure being able to do that, learning the multiple different ways that a hospital actually supports missions, as well as being out in the field and being at home abroad. So it's really quite interesting when a plane can't fly because the first aid kit is expired. So that was one of my biggest takeaways from that. But one of the best things that I honestly can say about that is the camaraderie and the teamwork, and just it's a brother sisterlyhood, and I would never redo that for anything. So it was a great time.
I understand that totally. That camaraderie is just huge. But that clearly didn't have a lot to do with how to use firearms. Where did that interest come from?
That interest, I always kind of liked them. I hunted a little bit as a kid. Then once I retired out of the Air Force, I wanted a firearm for my own personal protection. And I did not start that journey outright. But a few years later, I started actually working in a gun range part-time. And that's where I learned a lot of my things. And I became an instructor. And meeting different people in different walks of their life, being able to help them and sort them out with the firearms has also taught me a lot and myself, meeting different people, taking multiple different classes, different leaderships, different types of events. It's not just one of those things where you pick up a pistol and you're like, oh, I can shoot this. Not a problem. There's a lot of seriousness behind it. It's kind of like learning how to drive a car. You go through driver's training. So why not take a firearms class as well?
Really true, particularly given as dangerous as our nation is getting. Okay, it's time to get to the point now. If somebody decided they wanted to buy a pistol or a rifle, but let's go with pistols first. How do you pick the right one? Because that's pretty complex. It looks pretty simple, but it's complex because there are different sizes and weights and recoil and everything else. How does somebody start doing that?
Well, and that's very true, Denny. So you have to ask yourself, are you looking for home protection? Or are you looking for carry, right? So that's going to be one of my first questions. Is it just home protection or is it home and carry? So when we decipher that, then we start looking at the different sizes of guns to actually fit your hand, kind of like fitting a pair of shoes, if you will. You need to be able to grip it safely, be able to rack the slide, get your proper trigger finger placement on there. They call that the length of pull. So, and if you can't reach it, right, the length of pull is too far. If you're hugging and your index finger, your trigger finger is way over on the trigger, what we call hugging. So finding that proper placement on the trigger is one of the biggest first steps. And then from there, can you press it to the rear or not? If it's too difficult and the firearm starts to move one way or the other, then you're going to have shots going off to where you don't want them to go. So knowing what your strength is, and being able to aim the firearm as well, using the sights properly. And for me, I don't like sights on the firearm that have three white dots. So I like the different color aspects of it. And some people really like a red dot. But for beginners, I would stick with your traditional iron sights and finding something that you can see and you can focus on, and then kind of grow up into a red dot if that's something you're interested in.
That's true. Once you're there, that doesn't mean you have to stay there. And you, as you develop your skills and learn more, you can find yourself wanting to move. That's pretty reasonable about anything in the world, isn't it?
Correct. So then with that, you know, you also have to look at taking a training class. Again, if your goal is to carry every day, you want to work yourself up into a concealed class of some sort. Each state has their own thing, right? Concealed weapons, concealed pistol. Some states are open, you know, they don't have to have a certification, but for your own knowledge, you know, that class in itself is invaluable, kind of teaching you what the laws of your state are and the mental and legality aspects of, if you were to defend yourself with a pistol, what you're kind of getting yourself into. So, you know, I would definitely recommend an NRA basic pistol class to first get started. That class helps to teach you the ins and outs of the firearm, the proper fundamentals, taking it apart, cleaning it, actually shooting it. So you get a lot of introduction. It's kind of like a crash course of driver's training in one day.
You know, that makes a great deal of sense, because certainly if you aren't familiar with your pistol really, and you don't really understand how to hold it and shoot it, and you need it in a self-defense situation, and you don't hit your target, you hit somebody else.
Right.
You'll suffer all kinds of ways. This is not a pair of roller skates that you might fall down on. This is something that's, it's truly dangerous, and you have to be really ready, right?
Absolutely. And there's tons of, you know, videos out there that they have a lot of great information, but, you know, it's not University of YouTube. That stuff is just there for information. So, you know, take a class where you can get true hands-on and find yourself a really good instructor, not just your neighbor who, you know, goes out there and hobby shoots. Now, however, if your neighbor is really into firearms and does a lot of great things with it, they're a great help. But in the eyes of the law, who were you trained by? And was it a sanctioned organization to where you can actually have expert witnesses come into play for you to say, you know, this is really good material and they did everything right?
Yes. And you need that should that ever happen. And so taking that class that you're talking about is absolutely vital, in my opinion. And there are advanced classes you can take to keep your skills where they need to be and even make them more ready to go if necessary.
There's a couple of really good organizations out there. Obviously, you have your NRA organizations that has tons of training opportunities, but also to the USCCA, United States Concealed Carry Association. They have a lot of great opportunities as well, plus some training that you can do on your own and then meet up with a range officer, which you can do with us at Center Shot. And we spend about 2 hours with you on the range after you complete some video time.
Yes, you do. I've been there. This is Colonel Denny Gillum on Frontlines of Freedom. We're talking with Amanda Winters. Okay, Amanda, we've got a minute or so left. Rifles are another weapon. How is that different?
You know, truly the difference is your grip, right? Instead of having both hands on the pistol grip, you have one near the trigger, whether it has a pistol grip or just on the stock. And then your other hand is more forward. Your stance is relatively going to be the same. How to use your sights and all of that. It's just, it's going to be a different caliber of ammunition. So that in itself too is, can you handle a 12 gauge going off with it kicking into your shoulder? So again, same thing. What's the length of pull, the sights, classes? There's plenty of classes out there with the NRA and USCCA that will help you to choose those things for you and to teach you.
Yes, there are. And this is something that's dangerous. We need to do that.
Absolutely. The one thing I can say about the rifle aspect is that they do tend to lean that way more towards on the home defense side, mainly because especially a shotgun, right? Those rounds aren't going to necessarily leave the outside of your walls and go into somebody else's home. So that's the other thing to look at for home protection is how far is my bullet going to travel and what damage is it going to do if I miss my intended target? I'm not going to say it won't leave your walls, but less likely to.
Yes. Amanda, I know you're the manager of Center Shot Gun Range here in West Michigan. If listeners would like to talk to you or learn more, how can they reach you?
So they can reach us via email at info@centershotgunrange.com. They can reach us on our website, centershotgunrange.com, social media platforms such as Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and then our phone number is 616-371-7468. 616-371-7468.
And if you forget that, Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com, Amanda and I are friends and I shoot there regularly. Thank you, Amanda, for sharing some very needed information today. And thank you for your service to our nation. I'm glad we're friends.
Yes, Denny. Thank you so much for your service as well. And thank you for your time today. This was really good.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Next up, it's time for our weekly mailbag. Then it's military history time. You reported for duty to Front Lines of Freedom. Stand tall, troops. Let's do some more push-ups. How about 64 this time? I want your Ranger ready. Then stand at ease.
There is no doubt veterans sacrifice in service to this country. For decades now, troops have been sent around the globe to fight, putting their lives on the line, but with no clear U.S. interest to protect.
To honor that sacrifice, Concerned Veterans for America is working to end our nation's endless wars. As veterans ourselves, we know a better foreign policy can make our troops and our country safer.
Learn more about how you can help by visiting cvafrontlines.com. That's cvafrontlines.com.
Do you have a story inside you yearning to come out? As a self-published author, you are free to creatively distribute your book online or using your own professional connections. White Feather Press will publish your manuscript and set up online distribution, allowing the author to retain all copyright and distribution rights, as well as all profits. Check out White Feather Press at publishyourdream.com. White Feather Press, reaffirming faith in God, family, and country. I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. This is the final formation for this week on Front Lines of Freedom. Okay, team, it's mailbag time. I welcome comments from you, our listeners. Do send your thoughts to me at Denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Facebook. What's the first one, Skip?
Well, Colonel, Michelle, an Army mom, really appreciated Mr. Grinnell's comments.
Michelle Ricks has served our nation in many, many ways, and he speaks knowingly and speaks the truth. He's a good friend.
And Sam, the dad of a son who wants to go to a service academy, appreciated hearing about the MacArthur Society. What a mess our academies are in.
Sam, you're right. I truly hope that things will change significantly after the next election. We'll see. And now it's time for military history. What's first, Skip?
Well, Colonel, on 11 December 1777, during our Revolutionary War, General George Washington began marching 12,000 soldiers of his Continental Army from White Marsh to Valley Forge, Pennsylvania for the winter. As his men began crossing the Schuylkill River, they were surprised by a regiment of several thousand British troops led by General Charles Cornwallis. Cornwallis came across our forces by chance as he was foraging for supplies. Upon spotting the British troops, Washington ordered his soldiers to retreat across the Schuylkill River, where they destroyed the bridge to prevent the British from pursuing them. After engaging the British for a short time from the opposite side of the river, Washington and his army retreated back to White Marsh, delaying their march to Valley Forge for several days. The Continental Army finally arrived safely at Valley Forge on December 19, where they would face a winter of starvation, disease, and death. While they suffered, the Prussian military advisor Frederick Wilhelm Steuben, known as Baron von Steuben, drilled the miserable men in proper military discipline. Von Steuben joined the French-born Marquis de Lafayette and Baron Johann de Kolb, as well as Thaddeus Kosciuszko and Count Casimir Pulaski from Poland in the effort to turn the ragtag rebels into a well-trained regiment. Come spring, Washington would have a professional army with which to fight the British.
And he did, too. And on the 15th of December, 1945, General Douglas MacArthur, in his capacity as Supreme Commander of Allied Powers in the Pacific, brought an end to Shintoism as Japan's established religion. The Shinto system included the belief that the emperor, in this case Hirohito, was divine. Allied powers believed that serious democratic reforms and a constitutional form of government could not be put in place as long as the Japanese people looked to the emperor as their ultimate authority. Hirohito was forced to renounce his divine status, and his powers were severely limited. He was reduced to little more than a figurehead.
And on 12 December 1950, during the Korean War, the 1st Marine Division closed into Hungnam, having cut its way through six Chinese divisions, killing approximately 20,000 of the enemy on the way to the sea from Chosan Changjing Reservoir. Legend has it that the division commander, Major General O.P. Smith, supposedly characterized the operation with, "Retreat? Hell, we're just attacking in a different direction."
I've heard that story for a lot of years, and I believe it. And on the 13th of December, 1974, during the Vietnam War, North Vietnamese General Van Tran Trah ordered the 7th Division of the newly formed 3rd Division to attack Phulong Province north of Saigon. The attack represented an escalation in the ceasefire war that started shortly after the Paris Peace Accords were signed in 73. The North Vietnamese wanted to see how Saigon and Washington reacted to a major attack so close to Saigon. President Richard Nixon and his successor, Gerald Ford, had promised to come to the aid of the South Vietnamese if the North Vietnamese launched a major attack. With Nixon's resignation and Ford facing an increasingly hostile Congress, Hanoi was essentially conducting a test attack to see if the U.S. would honor its commitment to Saigon. The attack was much more successful than the North Vietnamese anticipated. The South Vietnamese soldiers fought poorly, and we did nothing. The communists overran the last South Vietnamese positions in Phuc Long on January 6, 1975. Emboldened by their success and by our passivity, the North Vietnamese decided that it was time to launch a major offensive. The next attack was launched in March, with Ba My Thuot in the Central Highlands as the initial objective. Once again, the South Vietnamese forces were largely ineffective, and we failed to respond. When the North Vietnamese intensified their efforts, the South Vietnamese, feeling abandoned by the U.S., collapsed, and totally in just 55 days. On April 30, 1975, North Vietnamese tanks crashed through the gates of the presidential palace, and the South Vietnamese surrendered unconditionally.
I remember that. I was a month away from my high school graduation, Colonel. I watched that on television.
Yes. Sad. And that's military history for today. Now it's time for our self-defense report. Take us there, bro.
All of us here at Frontlines of Freedom believe strongly in your right to keep and bear arms for protection of yourself and your family. All across the country, violent crime is skyrocketing, and now, more than ever, Americans need to stand up and exercise their Second Amendment rights. Now is the time to get trained and ready to handle this growing threat. But if you're not, please look into it and learn what you can do to legally carry a firearm to protect the ones you love. What's the story this week, Colonel?
Daniel Garcia walked into a San Francisco church and demanded money from a parishioner whom he didn't know. The parishioner continued to pray and ignored him, at which point the subject then violently assaulted the parishioner, punching him in the head. Other parishioners rushed to the victim's rescue and called 911 while the subject continued demanding money with a folding knife in his hand. Garcia then stole a car and fled the scene. Officers chased him down, but Garcia tried to blow them up with a pipe bomb and a Molotov cocktail. No one was hurt in the incident. Garcia was caught and charged with multiple firearms and explosive violations.
Thanks, Colonel. He's getting crazier every week, doesn't it?
Yes.
Well, according to an updated report from the Family Research Council, there's been an increase in criminal attacks on U.S. churches in the first quarter of 2023. The report states the first 3 months of 2023 saw approximately three times the number of attacks of hostility perpetrated against churches in the same time frame last year. These hostile incidents include arson or arson attempts, bomb threats, gun-related violence, and more. From January to March, 69 incidents occurred in 29 states, including 53 acts of vandalism. There is no doubt that America's attitude toward religion is changing, and not for the better. 50 years ago, Christianity was seen as an overwhelmingly good thing, and most Americans either attended church or believed it was a positive thing to do. Over the past two decades, though, church attendance has dropped off dramatically. But the bad news doesn't end there. Not only are more people not attending, they also have hostile feelings toward churches in general. How does that affect churches on a practical level? Well, quite simply, U.S. churches are waking up to the fact that they are no longer seen as sacred, hallowed ground, but are more likely to be seen as easy targets of opportunity for criminals. Because of this, many churches are being proactive in forming armed safety teams to protect their flock. In general, I think this is a very good thing, but I have the following caution. If you're going to arm your church, then it's imperative that you choose your team members wisely and that you make sure they have formal training from a competent instructor. Make it a formalized ministry with oversight and a solid team leader. A good place to start is by visiting the Faith-Based Security Network at www.fbsnamerica.com. Because of the growing threat across America, Frontlines of Freedom recommends that all churches consider taking steps to provide physical security for their members. Remember, your primary duty is the souls of your members. However, as a shepherd, you are also responsible for keeping them physically safe. Frontlines of Freedom salutes the quick response of law enforcement in this incident and thanks them for their service. God bless and stay safe.
Well said, Skip. And as a member of my church's defense ministry, yes, your advice is right on. Our movie of the month is Let's Eat. You can go to the Frontlines of Freedom website, go to the blog, and get the link and watch it for free. I'd appreciate getting your comments on the movie. Send them to me at denny@frontlinesoffreedom.com. Next week on Frontlines of Freedom, General Jerry Boykin will address some of our nation's challenges. Craig Rucker from the Committee for a Constructive Tomorrow will discuss climate change. Quentin Roberts will review this weekend's Army-Navy game. And Gil and Skip will present Border and Books. Our book, Frontlines of Freedom, with 19 authors, has the mission of helping all patriotic Americans step up and help our nation return to our traditional values of serving, not being served, of being in shape physically, mentally, and morally, of being proud of our nation. And now it's available in Spanish. You can purchase that book on frontlinesoffreedom.com or on Amazon. Please help us get this call to action book into the hands of all Americans. It'll be a great Christmas gift. And do get active in correcting our nation. Plug into Concerned Veterans for America. I encourage you, go to cvafreedom.com. That's cvafreedom.com.
Thank you, friends, for joining us for Frontlines of Freedom today and every week on this great station. Please check us out on Facebook and add your comments. And if you missed any part of this show, hey, all our shows are available on demand at frontlinesoffreedom.com. We especially thank our military listeners for serving our country with honor and dignity and for keeping us all safe. God bless you and your families as you serve.
I'm Colonel Denny Gillum. Thank you, listeners all across America, for joining us in the foxholes on the front lines of freedom. And how can I not say, beat Navy? Stand tall, be proud Americans, and join me next week for military and veteran information that you won't get anywhere else on the front lines of freedom. Dismissed.